The first reading this morning is a poem by Mehdil Khan Mariki, a beloved 19th century poet from Afghanistan, which is a land with proportionately more great poets than most nations that I know of. It's called The Candle.
Last night, I heard that a wisdom teacher spoke to a candle during a great supper. You who will illuminate our banquet, why is there so much shadow surrounding you? When the candle heard the question, it felt both wounded and moved. It replied with its flaming tongue, teaching the wisdom teacher better wisdom. If others benefit from my sight, why should I worry about the shadows that surround my stand? I am happy enough that each moment consumes me and that my flame gives light to this gathering. I burn throughout the night, dispersing grief's great shadow for everyone.
The second reading is quite brief and comes from the most famous writing book of Sonia Johnson, From Housewife to Heretic, written all the way back in 1980. Ms. Johnson was a fifth generation Mormon who was excommunicated from that church because of her feminist positions and for her strong critique of the leaders of that church who spent a small fortune trying to defeat the Equal Rights Amendment. She's given speeches all of her life throughout the country.
How desperately we wish to maintain our trust in those we love. In the face of everything, we try to find reasons to trust, because losing faith is worse than falling out of love.
I've been thinking about this a lot lately. My life, like most of your lives, is involved in social media. And there are many kinds of social media in this country. You may think I'm talking about something new. I am not. Social media have been around for many generations, for many centuries. The old social media, such as radio, television, phones, newspapers, are still around, with the small exception that the phones and the newspapers seem to be a lot flatter than they used to be. The newspaper, the chief social media for hundreds of years, is falling on hard times, as you know. Many newspapers have closed. And Newsweek magazine, which I mentioned last week, is giving up paper publication in December or January, so it can exist only on the flickering web. All of the tweets and Facebook walls are completely beyond me. But I know for many, these are the true cords binding life to life, heart to heart, and mind to mind in this scarily complex world of ours. I am told all the time that I am quite behind because I am not on Facebook. But my much younger godson, Adam Zepka, isn't on Facebook, nor are any of his friends at Stanford University. So I'm not entirely convinced that I'm cutting myself off from absolutely everybody who's under 35 because I'm not on Facebook. I do have this fool phone, however, and a computer in my office and in my home. Both of them have email. I may be describing your life partially, too, when I say all these things. And in my office or in my home, once I deal with the emails that grab my heart, the ones that are clearly the important ones, such as the announcement of a 10th anniversary of a young couple that I married on the beach at Asilomar a decade ago, or the heart-rending news of the death of my friend Mark Shannon this week due to the mercilessness of Lou Gehrig's, or the news that a friend in Ann Arbor is having a serious brain operation, all I'm left with is this. A promise from the United Parcel Service that I have a package waiting and that they will charge me $9.48 per day to keep it for me. A promise that I can get any medication I want from a pharmacy in Canada. A promise that I can finally get even more insurance for my car that I never asked for. A promise that I can graduate with a PhD, get ordained a second time, get a new car, several of them, for almost nothing, make $1 million in 10 seconds, have a far better sex life, marry a woman from Russia who is still a teen, win a free trip to the Bahamas with no tricks at all, send money to a personal friend who was robbed in Paris and needs a loan to get back across the pond. If, and only if, I will just trust them. Trust the sender of all these emails and send them back all sorts of bank information and cash money. I can unsubscribe, they tell me, if I want. Of course, I never subscribed in the first place. But when I go to the site to enable me to do so, it naturally doesn't work, or it says there is no such site. So here is my life these days on an ordinary Wednesday afternoon, this past Wednesday afternoon. A joy about a wedding anniversary. A sorrow about the death of a 54-year-old man I loved and honored. A concern for a wonderful friend with a new tube pushed into her temple on the surgery table, followed by 20 panicked political requests for money, and then 30 venal and quite precise examples of the real American dream, represented by the sheer muck in which my living and dead friends are floating. What is the real American dream? I am entitled to get something for nothing. Everyone else has to cough up. That's it. It feels, how shall I put this, disproportionate to me. The real life beat of my heart, my human heart, followed by slaps of email, telephone, and God knows who, serving up these little announcements. It's not even people, of course, who are doing it. It's something called a bot, an electronic thing that's making up all these stories and saying it's no such site. There's hardly any people involved in any of this anymore. Even all the stories of the widows in other countries whose husbands have left them $50 million, which they want to share with me personally, are all made up on computers. No one writes these things. I have to confess that all of this gets me angry sometimes. My joys, which are considerable, I'm happy to say, seem trivialized by all this. My sorrows, which are considerable, seem dismissed. The onslaught of assaults at this season in all the social media is especially high because we are a swing state politically here in Ohio, and there is no way to open up an email or drive down any street whatsoever without the flap, 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 flap of brightly colored signs with names on them flashing in my eyes, like the wriggling fingers of some stage hypnotist trying to get me to go to sleep. I know that I live easier when I can trust what's going on. I live happier when I don't have to be skeptical all of the time and protect myself. I'd like my love for and my reliance upon my fellow citizens in this country to be free, not blocked and not bent. I'd like to be able to trust things that come my way. I'd like to believe that we all love our country and that we all want to work together to make it safe and prosperous and generous and welcoming. I'd like to be able to trust my fellow human beings arriving at my doorstep through all the social media, whether of the old-fashioned kind or the up-to-date kind. But for the most part, I don't. And because I love my country, living without easy trust breaks my heart. As Sonia Johnson wrote so insightfully after being excommunicated by the church that she had grown up loving, how desperately we wish to maintain our trust in those we love. In the face of everything, we try to find reasons to trust. Because losing faith is worse than falling out of love. Exactly. Losing trust, losing faith, worse than falling out of love. Falling out of love hurts like hell. I think some of you may agree. It certainly was hard for me when it happened to me. But while the situation I described is especially snazzy and beguiling these days, because we're so good at nifty social media technology, all the things I've experienced are not particularly new. Living in bad faith, or to use the French original, mauvaise foi, is the phrase that the great philosophers Jean-Paul Sartre and Simone de Beauvoir used to describe the same situation happening in their days around 60 years ago, the situation where human beings are so surrounded by pressures from untrustworthy social forces that they begin to lose their own sense of value and begin to give up their innate freedom to act authentically based on those values. Mauvaise foi, bad faith. And the presidential candidates and other officials in the 18th and 19th centuries of our country were no less extravagantly accusing each other of obstructing the truth than they are now. They used to use posters on light posts, not social media on computers. They self-published newspaper smears, but they did it. Yes, the country is polarized in new ways because of easy access to technology, so that now we may hear at will all kinds of deranged voices we would not have heard before, such as those talking about President Obama's origins, or those who believe that Fred Flintstone rode a triceratops to work. But history is clear. Our nation has always been polarized from the very beginning. The number of folks who rejected the original Great Revolution was one-third of all the colonists, and another third really were not sure. Neither candidate for president could get away with the accusations made of other candidates in the 19th century presidential elections. And if you think that all that I'm saying only applies to the United States, all you need to do is to look at the top of the page of your orders of celebration where I reproduced Isaiah's lament. Oh, can you believe it? This once faithful city now prostitutes itself. Once justice was their fame, now they're all at each other's throats. Their money is counterfeit, their wine is watered down, their leaders sell themselves to the highest bidder. Sound familiar? No one stands up for the homeless or the defenseless. Note the date, 740 years before the beginning of our era, 2,740 years ago. But this history of untrustworthiness can tend to wear you down, bring you to the edge of mauvaise foi, bad faith, which is a hard way to live. This week I went into the office, the front office, to complain to Olwen Firestone, who was sitting there proofing the order of celebration. I was really angry. Now they've gone too far. I just got an email from someone I do not know with an email address from our national headquarters in Boston, the Unitarian Universalist Association. Somebody I don't know says that he has a royalty check for me. He wants to know whether it should be sent to my house or my office. Can you believe it? These damn machines are getting so sophisticated. These bots are so amazing that they can actually pretend to be part of the Unitarian Universalist Association with the right address. This is not somebody stranded in Paris. This is somebody who actually says that they're with the national offices. They can do anything now, these damn hackers. But then I went back and checked the email again. Turns out I was wrong. This actually was from the association. And I was getting a royalty check for an online version of the book that I wrote. A whopping $7.34. And so I had to go back and tell Olwen I had made a mistake of mistrust. I had become so suspicious, so distrustful, that I almost just erased the email and spammed it for good. I had grown accustomed to assuming the worst. Because the worst is what I get. Or is it? This has been going on for centuries in this nation and other nations, as I just said. This snake oil approach, this desire to dupe one another, to take from one another. Elections, wartime, peacetime, take senior citizens for their houses and their savings, take home buyers for their hard-won investments, take the gullible for anything they can get, fair prey for the clever and the conscienceless. Must all be legal, since hardly anybody but Bernie Madoff has been tried for all these bad faith operations, and clearly thousands, tens of thousands were involved. But I need to trust. I need to learn to trust. And as I've been thinking about it, I realized I've been fooling myself by expecting that I should put my trust first in other people, other things, other media, and second in myself. But it turns out I was wrong about that too. I have to have trust in myself first, trust in other people, other media, second. As I said, these things will always be going on. They have always been going on. They're not magically going to go away. It's kind of like the older brother in the story this morning, pointing out to his eternally irritated sister, I'm always going to be 4 years older than you no matter what. That's not going to change. And you know what? The older brother will be 10 years older, or 4 years older, all the time, for the rest of her life and for the rest of his life. But when the fallen sister is carried by her brother after she faints, she develops a different relationship with him, one not based on immediate irritation, based on his competitive skills. The 4-year difference won't go away, but she notices other qualities in her brother at last. And I have to do the same thing. I have to learn to trust other qualities in myself, and maybe even in the social media, despite their many irritating features. First, I have to be grateful that it's because of the social media that I was immediately able to write to the young man who joyously wrote to thank me for marrying him and his wife on that beach in Asilomar in California. I have the power with the social media to rejoice with somebody right away who lives in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Second, I was able immediately to reach out to Mona, the spouse of my friend who just died, to weep with her, to offer my arm around her shoulder, to let her know that I thought that of all the modern scientists in the world, he was the new Carl Sagan, of water, not of stars, and that he was important to me from the very first day that I met him. And she was able to write back to me immediately. And you know what, Mark? He always will be important to you. And third, I was able to write immediately to both the woman who underwent surgery in her skull and to her partner in life, a poem that I once read in a service here about being applauded, not for something great, but for just living life and facing life as it comes. It brought some cheer to both of them, even though they live in Ann Arbor and I live here. Caring for those that I love and knowing that I will always do that is something I trust in myself. I have to trust the lessons that life has taught me, that there is nothing really for free ever, and that all the offers I get are specious. I have to trust that my own small light, limited as it is, mistaken as it sometimes is, fluttering as it sometimes is still my light, and that my small light as a human being is capable of sympathizing as well as being skeptical. My light can't dispel all the shadows around me, the things that irritate me, nor can yours. But that does not mean I don't have to shine with what light I have. To quote the Afghan poet Mehriki, if others benefit from my light, why should I worry about the shadows that surround my stand? I am happy enough that each moment consumes me, and that my flame does give light. And like the candle in the poem, I trust myself to burn throughout the night as much as I can, dispersing grief's great shadow wherever I can, both for others and myself. The computer programs which come up with all the wonderfully convincing details of various leaders around the world who want to process 40 million pounds through my bank account here in Columbus really are astonishing. The details are amazing. In a few cases, they actually get their history right, in African history especially, and I admire that. But they're not trustworthy. As for me, I cannot take one step through this modern American world of techno bad faith without first having trust in myself, in my own capacity to make decisions based upon my experience and my reflections on those experiences. Separating out, as the Galilean once said so famously, all the weeds from the wheat come harvest time.